What are you here for? Who are you here to serve? What is your craft? What is your talent? How are you using it to serve others? That's what I want to hear about. If you're going to tell me about all your past projects and how they failed and this and that, thanks for the time.
Welcome to the Big Picture Blueprint. I'm your host, Dan Ebergoss, along with Mason McDonald. And we're going to discuss all things land, real estate, and business in general with all kinds of exceptional people. Let's get started.
What's up, everybody? My name is Mason McDonald, and I am here with my co-host, Dan Ebergoss, with the Big Picture Blueprint. And today we have the honor of interviewing a celebrity, someone that I've almost done business with and that I've seen do a ton for one of my favorite towns in the entire world. But before we bring him in, Dan, how are you doing today?
Mason, I'm great. It sounds like a broken record, I'm sure, but the market is hot. We are turning deals like crazy and buying apartments, having fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I was complaining to you right before our guest joined of getting five emails for five separate closings at the same time within 30 seconds. So business is booming and 2024 is off to a really, really strong start. But
yeah.
Let me take a minute to just introduce our guest. And today we have the privilege of interviewing Ben Dozier. He is the founder of Root Design Company, or co-founder, I should say. Ben works alongside his wife, Christy, to build, design, and renovate one-of-a-kind homes in their HGTV series, Building Roots. After founding Root Design Company in 2004, the couple's work grew to include all aspects of home design, boutique commercial projects, destination property development, and brand conception. But Ben, I know you own and operate a lot of different businesses in Pagosa Springs. Why don't you introduce yourself to the audience?
Yeah, man, my name's Ben, and I think my greatest accomplishment is I'm still married to my first wife, and I do have four too many kids and four businesses and a nonprofit, and now a TV show, which is definitely the wildest, craziest of them all. We've been blessed to do a lot of different things, from coffee shops to nonprofits to design build. But again, I think, you know, our greatest measure of success is family and relationship and community and some of those aspects that we get to weave into business and that so-called work-life balance, whether it really exists. I think it's all just one big thing that you either do well or you don't.
Absolutely. I mean, we see the chemistry on the television show, and it's really cool to be able to work and do business and do well with your wife and your whole family. But I know you, like myself, you're a Texas boy. What was the biggest transition moving from Texas to Pagosa Springs, Colorado? And for those of y'all that listen to the show, you guys know that I do business out there. My parents live out there. Go there on vacation all the time. It is small town America.
Yeah. So, you know, I think there's, I don't know if I've made this up, heard it somewhere, or if it's, I can get a doctor to back it up, but there's this self-diagnosed disease called nature deficit disorder. And I think I'm definitely recovering NDD, you know, work person. So born and raised in Austin, Texas, and man, just, you know, the cliche, the mountains were calling. I graduated Austin Westlake with a football, went to a small school in Gunnison, Colorado on a football scholarship and just continued my love for the outdoors and needed to get out of the concrete jungle and kind of get lost and played football as a ski instructor, competed a little bit every now and then with some X Games were up in Crested Butte those years that I was there and you know, got married and we ended up moving back to Texas to start our family and to start these businesses. And all along, it just kept coming back to Colorado, and that's where we spend majority of our time. And thankfully, we had a client in Austin that had a second home up here, and our business was really turning just more relationship-based than performance-driven. And that relationship just said, "Hey, would y'all go to Colorado and, you know, develop this ranch for my family?" And you know, I was like, "Don't ask twice. I'll be there tomorrow." And so that's how we ended up back here. We actually had a client move us here to Southern Colorado, to Pagosa Springs, fell in love with the area, and it was a perfect transition in life and marriage. If you do what you've always done, you'll be what you've always been. And so it was really a great time in our 10 years of marriage to, like, hey, we need to stir the pot, mix some stuff up, and kind of stand on the edge and look over that cliff and see what's on the other side. And this was kind of that opportunity to do that. So that's kind of where it started, on moving to Colorado type of basis and moving our family and kids with us.
Okay, so you mentioned developing a ranch for the client. Can we dive into that? What all you did? What all went into that? That's a big project.
Yeah, it's a big project. I mean, so we've really transitioned from doing primary residences to only secondary, third, fourth homes. Depends on the family and sometimes the pocketbook. But so that really changed the conversation, and it changes a lot. And it makes for a very relationship driven. So developing a second property, a family camp, maybe even a trust family development. It's a totally different conversation. And I love primary residences. We did them for years. But a lot of times they can be over leveraged, over mortgaged. They're just keeping up with the Joneses. And that beautiful stone countertop that has a crack in it because it's a natural material, that was a lawsuit waiting to happen. Whereas at a second home up in the mountains or wherever it may be, California, Idaho, Colorado, we've done them everywhere. It's more of a celebration. Like, that's a beautiful crack in that natural material. And so the biggest difference is just forgiveness. There's just a lot more forgiveness in that relationship and that conversation, timing and budget and all the things. Because building in remote towns, building a large project that's very emotionally charged for a family and all their kids and grandkids, whoever it's for, and in a remote area, learning those resources, how to use what you can, how to steward what you've been given with where you're at. Again, it's just so much more of a relationship. That's a conversation and so on. So that's really in 2012 to 2015, we really transitioned from primary residences to more of the second, third type of homes for families and stuff.
I think that makes a ton of sense in the market that you're operating in, Ben, because I've had tons of challenges with getting work done. I know my parents have had tons of challenges getting work done out in Pagosa Springs. So I'd love to talk a little bit more about the stakeholders within your business, and primarily your labor force and your suppliers of material, because getting materials and getting a workforce down there is really complex. And I'd love to hear kind of how you navigate that, as well as tying it in with the expectations of the person that is looking at the second or third home, where maybe timelines aren't quite as big of a deal for the person that's like, dude, I moved, I'm renting, I need you to finish this house in 3 months. And they're like, it'll be 3 years.
Right. Yeah. It's on the first page of our contract. If you're in a hurry, we're not.
There it is. Mountain time right there.
So, you know, there's this wonderful saying here in Pagosa Springs, we call it Pagoslo, and we love it, and we want to celebrate it. We don't want to live by it or operate by it, because we need to get work done. That's how we get paid. We work on a cost-plus basis with all of our contracts, and so, you know, I don't get to add a percentage to it unless I actually got the work done, because we bill everything in the rear after it's been done, and client sees that. So, you know, for us in a small resort community, when I first came up here for the client that originally moved us here, I called 17 contractors, 7 called me back. I met with 3, you know, and just started that relationship. And that's really what we've had to do here, pulling off what we had to pull off for the TV show. 25 projects in 2 years in a remote town has never been done. I don't know, but I'm guessing that's never been done in this town. At a, you know, almost $10 million level in 2 years, 25 projects. So for us, it was building a lot of purpose and a lot of common sense, purpose and common sense. So the common sense was, yes, the first thing we order is windows. And we find our high lead time material and our most difficult material. And we get those, we identify those long lead times. And I know that's pretty traditional in the sense of development and architecture and building, but we just really had to put that as a primary upfront focus. And so that, I think we do really well, maybe better than others. Most people get to framing and then they get their cabinets going, you know, while they're doing roughing. We're doing cabinets long before we're even framing. And so, and windows, we're getting those windows, you know, 6 month lead time on that. So I think that we really do well and really just have to put an emphasis on this and know that there's a ton of delays. The big storm coming right now, 40 inches. Something's not going to make it here this week, and that's going to cause a delay. The other thing is we sped up our timelines on payments instead of the traditional bill once a month and we'll pay you at 30, 45 days, you know, once we get paid from the client. We bill on the 1st and 15th of every month, so we bill twice a month. And what we've really seen with that, it's we don't pay our people more. I think we do pay our people well, but we don't pay them more. We just pay them more often, which, go figure, they tend to show up more often. So just some common sense with that. And so they turn in their invoices on the 10th and 25th. We bill them on the 1st and 15th. We have this system. And so we just built a lot of those processes that kind of got rid of some of this put go slow mentality. We work 4 days a week, only work 4 hours a week. We're just very hard at what we work at when we work. It's very tight and consistent and efficient. But then we celebrate the put go slow lifestyle. Now, the other side of it is purpose. We take a percentage, 1% of all of our revenue, all of the show's revenue, every revenue from all the companies that we have. And we commit 1% of our profit, not just the profit, but total sales revenue from all of our companies goes into our nonprofit. We just wrote about $48,000 worth of checks to the community in a bunch of different organizations. So for us, it's not about what we build. It's about who we build up. And so when our contractors and subcontractors and labor force are working with us, when they know they're getting billable hours and a percentage of that billable hours is going to give back to the community, again, they just keep showing up and hustling. It's been really
neat. Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of great points there. And Ben, just a little background on me. I've been doing new construction projects in Pueblo West since 2019. And, you know, along the Front Range, where the majority of Colorado's population is, it's still challenging to get good subs and get employees. So, you know, 25 projects in, I think you said 2 years. Did you have to bring labor in from other places, or did you? Oh, okay. Okay. Very cool. So all locals to get that done. That's incredible. Okay. Very cool.
Yeah. And I,
a lot of work.
Yeah.
A lot of conversations. So a lot of coffees, a lot of happy hour drinks. And again, we had people come and go just like a typical construction. I mean, we had the labor that we had, you know, we probably have 50% of the same labor that we started the pilot and the season one with almost 4 years ago when that started. We probably still have 50, maybe so percent of those people are still here. And that's the industry, which we have a lot of turnover, but we have the same subs almost on all of those projects. And again, just purpose-driven, relationship-based construction. Now, I don't know. I've been doing this now this way for so long, 10 plus, 12 plus years. I don't know how other people do it, but in a small town, you got to have it. There's always something missing or not making it. Someone's hunting somewhere and not going to come to the job site. So,
like Dan said, a lot of great points there. And when people hear that, of they're not hunting for jobs, people, they are hunting. That if it's elk season, they're out hunting. If it's ski season, they're skiing. If it's hiking season, rafting season. Pagosa Springs literally is one of the most beautiful places with all of the amenities, four seasons, amazing to be all year.
Yeah.
And I think, Ben, you make the point of giving back so much to the community, where Pagosa it's very local focus. Despite the fact that so many people have these second and third and fourth homes out there, it is a very local focused community that locals don't want too much growth and expansion. And so whenever they see new businesses come in and they're constantly giving back to the community, I imagine you get a lot more buy-in from everyone. And then kind of on the business aspect of things, I for all the healthcare people or manufacturing people that are listening, I hear a lot of just in time methodology with paying people, just in time. Of if it's 2 weeks pay, or you're getting paid every 2 weeks and shit, you need a new gun, you know that Ben and Chrissy are going to pay you guys on time. And then same thing with all of your materials and getting them, because supply delays are something that can be overcome if you're projecting out far enough. So I think that's a ton of great business advice for the people that are in manufacturing, or in new construction. Do you hear about the deals that Dan and I are doing and feel like you lack the capital or knowledge to do them yourself? Allow us to be your partners in this and visit gupland.com to learn more about how we can provide you with all the capital to complete land transactions, as well as the expertise and guidance for you to create your own business. Visit us at gupland.com.
And it's tough, you know, commercial. We don't do a lot of commercial. We do super boutique. We're working on two hotels in Santa Fe and exploring some other opportunities. But in commercial, it's really hard to, you know, passion projects in commercial industries are really tough. There's not budgets for those. And so, but still leading the project with a relationship-based model. And because there's always challenges. The commercial industry, I mean, again, I'm pretty far removed from it, but I can't imagine the challenges in the people. But being able to come into that place and build that relationship with that relationship-based model and give purpose, like our hat roots for each other, you know, the core value. Because, man, every day there's a reason to choose someone else for something that did not do it right just in time. Or is that just good enough? I don't want to do just good enough. Is it the right way to do it? And so building that with a commercial or boutique or residential relationship-based is, I think it's just a good thing. Healthcare, commercial, whatever industry you're in. We have several developments going on here in town. You know, most people are building those relationship-based with the locals. Man, it's hard to survive in this town if you don't do that well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So one thing I wanted to touch on there, you mentioned Santa Fe, also very beautiful. I heard Idaho earlier, California. So doing projects all over the Western United States like that, are you only doing Pagosa projects? And then once those are complete, then go and do the Idaho or Santa Fe? How do you manage projects all over the place like that? Because, of course, you got to find new subs and laborers and new relationships. What does that look like?
It's a little bit of a mix. And right now we're designing anywhere fun. We're generally only building locally. And so that's, we have projects right now in Missouri, Arizona, New Mexico, Colorado, and Texas. So five states, looking at some other ones, California, New York, excuse me. So on very specific projects, we sometimes CM those remote projects. So we're a client where we do architecture, interior, landscape, we do it all. We're a one shop firm. I know everybody says that and that word's overused, but we really, I'm more of a client representative where I, you know, because on a project, you need a survey, an engineer, an architect, and landscape, and civil, and MEP, and all these things. And that client doesn't want to communicate and doesn't know all those languages. They all speak different dialect. It's weird. And so I'm that one that brings in that common language to that client. So on some of those other projects where a client doesn't want to handle the GC and the surveyor and the engineers in a remote, in another state, I will CM the project, what's more non-commercial, but in a weird residential way. I'll go to New York or California, whatever. And in Ohio, local GCs there. I've had a project in Santa Barbara we did for 2 or 3 years for a private residence. And I hired two primes for this project and really built a team in this community and did that and was really just client representing for that client. And so that, because we were going to hire and fire people in GCs in and out. And when that client moved in, they didn't want to have that bad taste. Maybe so, because the industry isn't a messy industry. It's a difficult industry. It's people coming and going, you're throwing people offside and doing this. They didn't want that sourness. I was like, let me be that buffer. So when you move into this neighborhood or this community, you didn't have that, you know, to deal with some of that mess that comes with construction. Construction's messy. So, but we design anywhere fun. We build locally. Every now and then we see them.
So I've got a second what you said. You definitely need a communicator, a translator to communicate between the engineer, especially the engineer and the client. You need somebody who can translate that. But jokes aside, one thing I really want to dive in there, because all of my new construction, I'm going out and hiring a GC. I am not a GC. I don't want a GC the project. I more want to be the investor and orchestrator. And so how do you think about and ultimately incentivize these contractors so that your incentives are aligned, so that you don't have to double check every little thing they're doing and making sure they're not taking advantage of you in any way? What is that?
We just have our internal system and our cost plus and our controller, our in-house CM, our partners, and just that process of identifying lead times and identifying risk and liabilities in a project, and really sitting down with that project manager or sometimes a GC. And we do a lot of that. You know, GCs often are really great at managing a project, but maybe not really good at managing a business. And we're really good at that. I'm not an architect. I'm not an interior designer. I'm not a GC. I'm not any of these. And I talk like an architect and I smell like a contractor sometimes. I mean, I play all the roles. And so we really find that GCs benefit, and we do a lot of that internal billing administrative. And so we find that GCs really, I need someone on this project to do this project. Someone that's project based. And they see behind walls and through the walls and under the subfloor. They have that unique ability, and let us do the paperwork for you. And I don't need his full GC fee because he's not doing the admin. He's just turning it in. We're reviewing. We're double checking. We have all of our subcontractor agreements and all of our releases of lien scheduled and all that. So again, relationship conversation. So we're coming in, you know, with other GCs with, you know, half their price, because half of their work is just putting up with the client. The other half is dealing with the admin. They can do what they do on a job site blindfolded with their hands tied behind their backs and their shoelaces. Because they're that good, but they suck at everything else business-wise. Their dashboard, you know, their dashboard receipt GCs and their chuck in a truck guys. And so we, and those guys are incredibly talented and we need them. I don't need them doing business. Let me do that for you. Here's our system. Here's our process. Come into this root thing. And let's do this really well as a team. Two are greater than one. We all know that. Three sharpens.
Oh, yeah. Ben, I think we can all kind of agree that a lot of our greatest successes have come from saying no to the right projects. And what are some of those risks and liabilities that might come up whenever you're meeting with some of these GCs or potential projects that you look at and say, this is not for us, this is too scary. We can't touch this project.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I think, you know, I think more emphasis in our building construction world needs to be put on that. You know, I really think Donald Miller says it best. And what a great business guy, author, hero on a mission, building a business brand, all the wonderful stuff he writes and podcasts and leads on. But in our relationships between client and even with the GC, I'm looking for the victim. I don't hire victims. I don't work for victims. I look for heroes and guides. There's heroes, there's guides, there's villains, and there's victims. And villains you can pretty sniff out, smell out pretty quick. The victims are hard. A sheep and wolf's, you know, whatever. Sheep and wolf's clothing. So we really try to find that. And that's just really, again, I keep hitting on the relationship base, but man, just the conversation when they go into it and they've talked about all the other projects and all the other times they got sued and how bad it was, they're a victim. They haven't gotten past it. And you're not bringing them out here. When I hire employees and we interview them, and they talk about their last boss in a negative way, guess what? They're going to talk about you the same way when they leave you. And so I think just having that innate ability to connect with people, take the time, go have coffee, go have a drink, invite them over for dinner in your house. How awkward. This new guy I just met on the street. He's a great GC I heard about. Let's have you over for dinner in my house with my wife and my kids. Man, you'll learn a lot. And so that's, I think, I know you probably wanted a different answer for that, but man, a hero on a mission, what are you here for? Who are you here to serve? What is your craft? What is your talent? How are you using it to serve others? That's what I want to hear about. If you're going to tell me about all your past projects and how they failed and this and that, thanks for the time. It's the most beneficial time I'll ever have with someone when they tell me everything bad about what's happened to them, because that's the safest decision I can make and say, see ya, let's move on. Love you. What can I do for you?
let me buy you a smoothie from the coffee shop to help you out or something. I don't know.
I love that answer. And that's what I'm looking for is these people, you're risking hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars on these business relationships. And whenever you are looking at whether it's a business relationship or a spouse or a friend, if you see chaos and toxicity and confusion and victim blaming or victimhood or whatever you want to call it, recognize that you are not going to be the exception to the rule. You are going to follow along with the rule, and it is going to bite you in the butt down the road. But Ben, I think talking about Donald Miller and some of the brand stuff is where we want to start moving the show a little bit, where I've gone to Root House Coffee. I see the stuff you guys are doing. I went to Baylor University for my undergrad, and I saw what happened to that town. I was there in the early 20-teens and saw what Chip and Joe did to Waco, and seeing some of the similarities with you guys. Talk to me a little bit about how you went from a design company to building to all of these additional brands that you have.
You know, again, great question. I appreciate that, Mason. And I don't know if my answers are always orthodox or unorthodox, but I think in business, again, man, it's so weird. We were talking about this the other day. In 2012, I wrote a vision statement. I wrote a vision paper. It was 6-7 pages long. It's incredible. But it was Root Design now and 10 years from now. And that was in 2012 when I wrote that, just on a whim. And just Root had really grown 2004 to this 2012 mark. And I never had a business plan. I don't believe in business plans starting up. I think you got to be mobile, agile, and sometimes hostile. And you launch it, and you run, and you go. And then you start to craft it, meld it, form it as you go. But 2012, I wrote this, man, and it was really crazy how I talked about a retail coffee shop in a Colorado office. And this hadn't started yet. None of this had started. I didn't write about a TV show. That was the wildest imagination, was never even in the universe until it, you know, got brought to us. But we wrote that out. What would Christy and I want? And it was so fun traveling here with our family. What if we had a little coffee shop where we had design team meetings around coffee in our own retail space, where we sold some of our favorite things that we love to put in houses at our coffee shop. And we built a community around this conversation. And we all love coffee and conversations. That's where all dreams start. And so we started literally building that. And we had created Root House. We bought Root House. We started Root House in 2019. I wrote about it in 2012. Even had the Instagram, the name, a little logo sketch. So I think knowing how we got here today was dreaming those dreams back then. And that's really hard to do for people sometimes, but to take that moment, I love doing solo trips, especially if you can do them in a tent, in a backpack. You'll really find yourself really quick. Sometimes we have a family condo in South Padre. I'll just go spend a week there by myself and just dream and vision and write that stuff down. And I think where Root Design's headed, I don't know really yet. I think we're in a new phase of what that vision looks like. And sometimes that comes to you in an epiphany. Sometimes it takes 3 years to write. And so that's, if that answers your question, I believe writing out those visions and those dreams, crafting them. Some people have tools, Jenna Kutcher, Amy Porterfield, Donna Miller. There's all these tools out there. And some of them are really great. Or just go take a hike. Just go take a hike, and you'll start to see more around you when you get outside. So that's how I would kind of answer that question.
No, I think that was a great answer. I think Dan and I talk a lot about of planting the seeds for the future and everything. And for me, I was always, you take the strengths finder and stuff like that. My top one was always futuristic, of always looking ahead, looking for the future, and being able to balance that also with the execution of making it happen. That's the hardest part of it. Is it's great to be able to dream big, and a lot of people with scarcity mindset are incapable of dreaming big. But everything you're saying about getting out in nature, a lot of the best ideas that I know I have, that Dan has, I mean, they're on a ski lift or shredding through powder or going on a hike. I don't know about backpacking. We had a pretty bad experience doing the Maroon Bells this last year together. I think getting out and being alone and spending alone time is great. But I want to talk about with you and Christy of the CEO versus COO type of role, of the visionary versus the executor. How does that kind of balance with you guys? Are you both very futuristic focus, or is it how does that work together?
Great question. If you do the Enneagram, we love the Enneagram. I'm a recovering eight. I'm a seven, recovering eight. My wife's a nine. She's a peacemaker and a recovering thrower. She used to throw things when we fought. That was years ago. And so we've all have grown. I tell everybody, everybody has multiple marriages. Just depends if you have them with the same person or not. And I don't know what marriage we're on now, especially with this whole TV show, because that was a whole nother world doing that. But, I got to bring this down to kind of a little bit of our faith and how we work. And I want to answer your question, CEO, COO, how we merge. But, man, I work on my relationship with the Lord, and God never spoke to couples. He went to Mary. He went to Joseph. He went to Sarah before he went to Abraham. He never came and showed up and talked to a couple. He talked to the individual. He wants that individual relationship. And so my wife and I really seek those out. When we were young, we kept doing Bible studies together and trying to read James Dobson this and this Bible study and read this and go to this church and this and that. We tried to do everything right. Man, we were like two rams, just like, this is not working. This is not what I thought marriage was supposed to look like. And we went to an elder. He said, why the hell are you doing that? Show me a time in the Bible when God spoke to a couple. He wants you. He wants you individually. So we work on that. And it's so crazy, unbeknownst to us, how often he brings us together. He's working on us in individual ways. And we come together with family, marriage, and our business, how united they are. And what should we do on this project or that project? How we should be working together with this client, with this team. We had a partner meeting last night and we all sat around. We had ranch waters, we had some chips and dip, and we sat and we really just, again, relationship based. So Christy, in regards to, yes, I am more of the daily active business runner, everyday decisions, working with the team. And that is my focus, to build the team, protect and preserve the company as we move forward, to operate in abundance, not in scarcity, like you said earlier. Christy's, again, primary focus is our home and our family and our kids. And so she does that. Christy really comes in at the end of her project and does a lot of the staging and styling and the decor. But yesterday she would walk through a big, beautiful 5,000 square foot new home that we're building with the clients. It was only framed, no rough in. We just walked through the framing stage and she came and joined along. Didn't have much input, but she's taking it all in so that when she gets that final kind of inspiration, aspiration, that really wants those last little touches and pieces and parts to this home that really connect to the client, she does that so well. I'm just building a big shell and poking a bunch of holes in it called windows. Really dumb idea. Let's build a shell to protect us from all the stuff that we're trying to get out of, the wind and the rain and the snow. Let's punch a bunch of holes in it. But she comes in and really connects it to the client at the end. But that starts all the way back in framing. So yes, we have meetings, and yes, we have daily to-dos, and she hates meetings, and she's horrible at email. She never has emailed a client, I think, in the history of her life. She's actively involved from the beginning through the end of a project. I am running the day-to-day operations with our team, with my EA, with my controller, with my partners, with our project managers, the whole team. A lot of fun.
Oh, yeah, it does. And I think you said peacemaker is part of her personality trait, right? And I think that whenever you're looking at all these emotionally charged decisions where, you know, for myself or Dan, that has the investor brain of, man, we don't care what countertops look like as long as they match, sort of, which we're like colorblind, basically. So it doesn't matter. And her being able to come in kind of towards whenever someone goes into a house and they're like, this is just an empty shell, and her being able to relate to them and make peace and say, look, this is what it's going to look like, though, and picture this and picture that is awesome. And then on the domestic front, obviously, we can probably agree that that's probably the most important part of managing a business is happy wife, happy home, happy life, happy business, all that kind of stuff. So I think that was a fantastic response to how you guys operate together.
Okay.
Yeah, I noticed it sounds like you've done a good job of dividing up responsibilities where there's certain things you own and you run, and there's certain things she owns and she runs, and you don't have as much input. But all the a corollary to all this, Ben, that I wanted to touch on, okay, you have your wife, you have four kids. So talk to us a bit about the TV show. How has that impacted your business, your personal life, both positive and negative? Would you recommend that if that opportunity comes up for others? Has that been challenging, you know, having a bit of, you know, a little bit of fame, having kids and a wife? Tell us about that.
Yeah, great question. And we get that asked from time to time. And yeah, if you're thinking about doing a TV show, run. No, we've said time and time again, it is one of the hardest things we have ever done. And being married 24 years and raising four kids and living in multiple states and all that's hard. I came from a storytelling background of a single mother living in cars. My brother was in prison. My other brother committed suicide. I mean, we just have a crazy background of abuse and alcoholism. I got kicked out of every school through elementary. I went to kindergarten twice, elementary twice, first grade twice. I was in therapy my whole younger years. I was a case study at the University of Texas psychological department. So done a lot of hard stuff, and the TV show is definitely one of the hardest things. So, but it was also one of the greatest blessings we've ever got to experience, because you can't do it alone. That's for sure. And you've got to have that community. You've got to have those partners. You've got to have those mentors. And so we worked, I spent time alone. I took that trip and really just absorbed it and worked on what can we do? How do we protect and preserve the business? Who do we need? Getting the right people in the right places, not victims. And I've made mistakes. So we've been hospitalized 3 times, blackmailed 3 times, and sued once on this TV show. And it's the hardest thing. And there was a lot of things we didn't do well and a lot of things we could have done better. I'm not sure we were at fault in a lot of these things with regards to negligence and typical construction stuff, because everybody's watching. You've got to do it right because everybody's watching. But just setting up the right people in the right places, we made a lot of mistakes, but you and I both know those are the biggest learning platforms, those mistakes. And so season one was very, very hard. Doing what we did in this small town and being rookies at it, we were up for doing season two if we could change how we did what we did. And we made some very strategic changes in our welcome letter, in our contract, in some of the new hires that we needed to bring on to do a season two. And so personally, it really drove Christy and I closer. Sometimes we were paralyzed. The hours, 18-hour days, you got your producer knocking on your door at 5:30 in the morning, and they don't leave your side till sometimes 10:30 at night. And with a lot of ranch waters involved. And I mean, it was hard. And TV, hands down, just does weird stuff to people. Just because you're on TV doesn't mean there's money. Money doesn't make you change you. It makes you more of who you are. So you're either a really nice guy, or if you're a jerk, money's just going to make you more of a jerk. And we committed 1% of everything from this TV show to give back, because that's who we wanted to be. This wasn't about us. It was about the community. And so, but a lot of those moments, again, hospitalized, long 18-hour days. We were living in a remodel. We live in a tiny cabin that was built in the late 1800s. That's 1,000 square feet with not a single closet. Just our TV wardrobe alone took up our room. And so, but what all that did was really drive us closer. I mean, we had a lot of fireside conversations that we cried. Sometimes we just sat and just said nothing. You never said so much in that moment. So if anybody's looking at it, you better be ready to do it. It's one of the hardest things you'll ever do, but it's also one of the most wildest, rewarding, most authentic relationship building experiences you'll ever get to have, because it will lead through the hypocrites, the bad people, the people that really weren't your friends, the people that really have your side. It'll weed through them really quick. And the ones that are there with you, man, that relationship couldn't be more tried and true going through that experience.
That was an incredible answer, and we greatly appreciate your vulnerability with both your past and background and the experience, because I think a lot of people will assume they see the happy-go-lucky, like, great, beautiful family, building these beautiful homes throughout the state and throughout the country and everything like that. And they assume, oh, this is their day-to-day lives. Cameras just showed up and filmed them for a little bit and cut it all together and edited it, as versus, no, you are working more than you're sleeping. You have very limited time alone, which that's something that I'm a huge advocate for, whether you are single or married, is get your alone time. You need to be alone from time to time. It's very Walden-esque type of thing of going on a walk in the woods by yourself. But I think that right there really does show a lot of the pros to it, a lot of the cons to having yourself and your family filmed constantly, and everything associated with it. But what about Pagosa? How do you feel like Pagosa has been impacted from building Roots? Do you see growth coming? Do you see more tourism because of you guys? Do you feel like a local celebrity? Do you feel like a local villain? What's the thought there, kind of more macro at the town level?
Yeah, I doubt, thankfully, because of the community, a wonderful, less villain, we've gotten a ton of support. We, social media is such a strange platform and landscape. And yes, we've had some people, oh, you're ruining Pagosa. Oh, now Pagosa discovered. Pagosa was discovered long before we got here, long before the TV show. There are developments and progress in place that were here long before the TV show even got here. So I think a lot of the locals saw that. And, it's such a small town. It's so fun. We walk from our house to the coffee shop. They're, separated by 100 yards or so. And we get to see everybody, and they know us as Ben and Christy, not as building Roots. And so, it's a lot of fun. They ask the same question. What's it like? What's it really like? And we're like, come to set, come check it out. Set's cool. I've never been on set before until they showed up one day, and I was like, oh, this is how y'all do this. There's mics everywhere and lights and, all this stuff. It was really entertaining. We just always invited people. And so I think Pagosa is on its own track of growth with or without building Roots. Yes, have we seen more people coming to the coffee shop and more people connecting to the area? Yes. Is it a measurable difference? I really don't think so. I think the hot springs, the development with the world's deepest, hot springs and that resort and that attraction, and they're doing an $80 million development. We have other developments in town. We have neighborhood. We need housing. We need infrastructure. We need all that. I'm not growing the town. I'm only remodeling your existing structure. So people that blame me for growing the town, I haven't built a thing new yet. So I'm only making it better. I'm not growing it. So go argue with those guys if you don't like what I'm doing. I'm just trying to tell a better story of family, community, and hopefully good business. So, but yeah, it's a lot of fun walking down the street, waving, talking. We've taken a few more pictures than we normally take, and I've signed a few hats, and that's fun, whatever. It's a bunch of candy. It's fun. But the town has been really welcoming of this. And Pagosa was on the map before building Roots.
Oh yeah. I mean, I was a wolf pup back in the '90s. Yeah. So
and all those wolf pups are coming back now and doing development and building what needs to be done. I'm for progress. There's a lot of stuff happening in small town, old school. You either got two jobs or two homes here. You're one or the other. I'm the two jobs guy. And we love them both. We need them both. This is a tourist community. So I'm pro development. Some of the development, yes, I would do different. I'm a designer. I'm going to have an opinion. But I welcome it all. There are some developments that are crazy. I welcome them all. Do I wish some of them were done differently? I do. But we need it. Our labor, our housing stuff here is at a critical mass. And we need developers. We need smart people. We need our town to also follow suit and really just wise up in the future of Pagosa. Because if they don't, it's coming with or without their wisdom.
Oh, yeah. And that's what my project is. Walking distance from your house, technically, it's workforce housing. And that's the challenge of getting it done affordably enough so where the workforce is actually able to live affordably in that project. And I think long term, what will happen with my building and my double lot downtown is we'll tear down, rebuild, and do a more design focused project when the town's ready for it. But I mean, Dan, I don't think you've been to Pagosa yet. I go all the time, been going all the time since I was a kid. It's Wolf Creek's a little far away, so you're not living right on the ski resort, but you do have the world's deepest hot springs. You've got all this great hunting, hiking, whitewater rafting. I mean, my wife's favorite hike in the world is the Piedra River hike. It's just gorgeous out there. It's beautiful. There's still a lot of land out there. What do you think is holding Pagosa back from turning into a Crested Butte or a Breckenridge or a Telluride or something, one of these more famous mountain ski towns?
Question gets asked a lot. I'm honestly probably not the best one to answer that, or I maybe haven't lived here long enough. I love some of these old guys. I ran into one the other day, Hutch. He was one of our primes on that first project in 2012, one of our GCs, and he's an old guy. He's been here for a long time, and I ran into him yesterday on the trail. And, you know, I think, one, there's a ton of politics in this town and small town, good stuff. One, we have an interstate running right through the middle of town. Crested Butte, Aspen, Telluride, they don't have an interstate running right through the middle of downtown. And so that's difficult. I can't count how many 18-wheelers are going past right now on Main Street in front of the middle school and elementary school. And so I think there's some limits to that will always be in existence, that the town has so much land around here. I believe we will continue to grow as a rural community. But to becoming that, and I lived in Crested Butte, becoming that downtown Crested Butte, Elk Avenue, I don't know if that's, if it happens, it's going to happen in Pagosa slow time. It may be another 20, 30 years before we see that. The resort money, the Wolf Creek Resort, what an incredible ski area, still family run. And, could it be better? Could it be nicer? Could it be all? It's perfect. It's perfectly imperfect. That's what I love about it. But all that sales tax revenue goes to the other side. They're not in our county. All that revenue goes up. Tens of millions of dollars goes to the other side. The city sold the hot springs years and years ago, many, many years ago, and it's sold a couple times since then. They should have kept that because what a great revenue source. So lots of politics, lots of history in the town. I'm not the one to answer that question. It's coming. It's here. But I think it's going to be at the Pagosa rate. And people like you, get in now. Get in early. People complain locally how expensive the pricing is. Buy. Hurry up and buy. Buy as much as you can now. Go to Austin, go to Dallas, go to California, go somewhere else and look at pricing. This is dirt cheap compared to that. So if you're listening, buy, do it well, build locally, all those things. And again, I don't know where the town's going. We were watching some old family videos last night, and I love the park behind me wasn't paved that long ago, this parking lot, and the park didn't have a playground in it. Now it has a playground in it. We've got three geo growing domes right by our coffee shop that the community loves. They're just so full with vegetables and fruits and all this stuff. And I love the little things, the town park, the San Juan River Trail that runs the town. I love everything that our town is doing. James Dickoff, our town planner, I applaud him. Nobody likes the town planner. Nobody wants to deal with him. I think he's doing a great job with the resources.
Absolutely. I think being able to maintain that small town and also have growth and development and everything, it's complex. It's really complex. And you're right. The best time to buy is either today or 10 years ago. So do it today. And check out the episode that will have been released by the time this show comes out with Lauren Talley with Big Mountain Realty down in Pagosa Springs, and give Lauren a call to go buy some land, go buy a house out there.
So speaking of 10 years ago, you told us about how you got a major vision in 2012. So, bringing full circle to today, what's the future of Root Design Company look like? Where do you want to be 2030, 2035?
When Mason and I were starting our land businesses, capital was the biggest hurdle for both of us. Over the years, we found this is the case for nearly everyone in the land business. And that's where Ground Up Partners came from. Ground Up Partners is a capital provider for land deals. We'll bring all the funds necessary to close the deal,
You just bring the signed contract. Visit gupland.com to submit your deal and get started today.
Yeah, great question. And yeah, you know, I grew up with this saying, if you do what you've always done, you'll be what you've always been. And right now, it's kind of a cliche. I want to keep doing what we've always done, and which is very different than my personality. I'm a risk taker. I'm an adventurer. But I also want to steward what's been given to us with Building Roots. And the exposure has been wonderful. We've always been very kind of a private design build firm. We've worked for A-list celebrities, NFL coaches, incredible professional athletes. They don't open up Lux magazine and look at an ad and go, oh, I want to hire that guy. That's all that is word of mouth, that upper echelon type of people. And so now we've been exposed to a mass market, and there's some beautiful stories in there. And so I want to steward what we've been given, the opportunity and the amount of emails and interest in working with us. So I think we may go into a season of where let's ride this wave type of deal and really steward it well, which is different than my, hey, if you keep doing it, you'll be what you've always been. But I really want to steward that well. And I think we are in a season of what's next. I don't know. We've talked about writing books. We've talked about doing podcasts. We've talked about speaking. We have several speaking engagements coming up. We're speaking at Liberty University at one of their convocations, which I think they have 100,000 viewers. And so what a great audience. So I don't know what the vision looks like. I want to honor the craft that God has given me and us and our team and the beautiful, amazing people that we have. And I want to steward that really well. I want to protect and preserve it. Protect and preserve doesn't mean on the defense. It means let's go to new sales limits we've never gone. Let's 10X our revenue, because that's going to protect our company, right? Because companies need profit. They need revenue. And so my protection and preserve isn't kind of this defensive. It's more of an offensive approach to how do we do this and do this really well. So I know we're going to be in that season where, man, we're really going to count our blessings. And we've got some really neat jobs around the country and right here in Pagosa Springs. I hope we do those really well. And call me back in a couple years maybe and see what my next vision becomes.
That's awesome. And
yeah,
we're so excited to come along for the journey and see where you go. And I think the idea, and it's something for the entrepreneur, the ADHD person that's always excited for the next big thing and wanting to do everything all the time. And whenever you figure out that system, double, triple, 10X down on it and keep going. But Ben, I know we're coming to the end of this. Are there any questions that you wish we had asked that we did not ask you?
Oh my goodness, that I haven't been asked before. Golly, what's the secret sauce to life? I don't know. No, what's a great question.
When are Ben and Christy opening Papacitos in Pagosa Springs or good Tex-Mex?
That's right. Well, that's right. We would love to open another Root House. That's something that we're definitely exploring. We have a brand, Field and Far, our apparel brand. We're really interested in where that can go, and telling more of that story. So I think your question of you know, what's next for Root Design is really a great question that I'm asking myself and our team, what that's going to look like here in the near future. So that was the best question.
Ben, we've got to throw a fun question. When I was doing some research on you, I saw extreme skier, former Crested Butte ski instructor. You know, I've snowboarded down a bunch of 14ers. I think we definitely share a love of that sort of thing. Have you gotten out to ski at all this year? Are you going to go to Wolf Creek when the 40 inches comes in?
I will definitely be there. And, man, I skied the other day with a mentor of mine I met a few years ago, and he lives here. He runs a huge, wonderful nonprofit around the world, and it's based in San Diego, but he's the CEO and founder, and he operates here again because his mind's bigger, the mountains are bigger, the views are bigger. He just operates at a bigger level. And he has stage 4 cancer. He's 65 years old. He's about to have a huge tumor removed out of his face, a cancerous tumor. And we skied the bumps like none other. We were so exhausted Sunday afternoon. It was the best church I've had in so long skiing with this guy. And that's what we get to do here. I was so inspired. I was like, oh, my gosh. This dude is 65 years old, stage 4 cancer. He's about to get on a plane tomorrow, go out of an amazing cancer surgery removal tumor. And we're just crushing it at the mountain. It was one of the best days. I've been skiing as long as you guys have wolf pups, you know. And, man, we just get to have – Pagosa has those moments here, that white space. It has room for that. And so, yeah, that was – I get – he's an epic skier. I hope I'm skiing – at his, he loves the bumps. Again, dude's just crushing the bumps at 65 with stage 4. And I was like, I want to be that guy.
That's incredible. I have to say, I've met so many people in their 60s and 70s in Colorado that still snowboard and ski. It has made me very optimistic about aging. But anyways, Ben, thank you very much for coming on. If people want to hire you or find out more about you, where should they go?
Man, go to the website, the best, www.rootdesigncompanyallspelledout.com. You can always find us on social media. Instagram's a great platform that we use mostly. Shoot us a DM or email us on the website. Tell us a good story. If you need a project, we're happy to help. But yeah, that's the best place to find us and follow us for more.
You heard it here, guys, rootdesigncompany.com. This is Ben Dozier, Mason McDonald, and Dan Abercost for the Big Picture Blueprint, signing off.
And that's it for today's episode of the Big Picture Blueprint. If you found it helpful, please share it with your friends or anyone you think that it could benefit. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a rating, and we'll see you in the next episode.